Hello, my name's Harvey from the National Self-Build and Renovation Centre. Thank you for visiting us today and for choosing to take a tour of our renovation house. You'll be guided through the house by David Hilton. David is an expert on our help desk here at the centre and also presents several of our self-build courses. The renovation house is typical of a property built in the interwar years and has clearly had very little maintenance work or modernisation done to it. As a result, just about everything needs work to bring it up to standard. As you move through the house, David will guide you through identifying and resolving most of the common problems encountered during a renovation project. Enjoy the tour.
Welcome to the renovation house tour. In order to start the tour, you should be standing in front of the number one. The number one is located to the right of the house, near the scaffolding. In front of us, we see that the wall has been painted. On a 1920s property such as this, the mortar that gets put onto the wall is usually lime-based, which means that it is semi-vapor open, which allows vapor to move through the wall seasonally. If we start adding vapor closed products such as cement onto the wall, we will then damage the ability of the wall to be able to breathe, and we will then have to take all of that product off or allow the lime to actually deteriorate, which is not a very good thing for the building. When we look at this wall, we can see that there are certain cracks that have appeared. And we also see that towards the top of the wall, the colour has changed as well. So we would see that as an indication that something else is going on in the building. This wall would need to be cleaned up. The vapour closed products taken off, and it returned to the brick layer. Then it can be recoloured or rendered in a vapour open render. We're now going to move round to the front of the building, and we stand in front of the bay window. While looking at the bay window straight on, we can see above the bay window that there is cracking as well. Now, typical for this age of property, we should not really see cracking unless there is an incident that has happened. The cracking on this particular property, which is above the bay window, is diagonal cracking, which indicates to us that something below that has dropped, and this would require further investigation. The diagonal cracking on this particular one, because a lot of the bay windows in the past either had wooden structural elements that can move over time, or very often with bay windows they didn't actually have foundations, and what can happen is that the bay would drop and you would then get the diagonal cracking. The other thing to look for in a property prior to late 1920s, because of the lime, is lime never really sets. So you would expect the lines to undulate rather than crack. It is worth noting that undulating lines in a lime-based mortar are equivalent to small cracks on a cement-based mortar. With this particular project, the whole bay will need to come out, and if there is no foundation underneath the bottom wall of the bay, then that foundation will need to be reinstated. If it is simply the top end that is cracking, then the base wall can stay together and we would just simply rebuild the bay using new mullions and a new roof line and making good. For tips on how to make this good, we do have a course that we run. It's a one-day course, and we talk a lot about how to fix structural defects and cracking on that course. As we move further towards the front door, we can see the path in front of us. If we look towards the top of the building, we can see that the gutters need a little bit of upgrading, and the guttering downpipe is also missing its bottom half. We can see discoloration on the wall, and we can also see that the water has created damage to the wall as well. On closer investigation, we notice that right at the bottom, behind the bicycle, is an air brick. This air brick goes underneath the floor of the property inside. And what is happening with this is that water is able to go into that air brick. We also see that the buildup of the ground with the extra shingle has allowed for it to be almost breached. So any rain that perhaps blew towards it could lift up in this area and also enter into the air brick. By changing just the downpipe and replacing the rainwater goods, guttering and downpipe, etc., we are not getting rid of the whole problem. Because when we have a look towards the left corner of the building, we notice that there is also a soil pipe from an upstairs bathroom which was added to the building way after the building was created, probably in around the 1970s. Then there's also no gully. So any water that builds up in this area will not be able to run away. And this pathway has been added as a wheelchair access, and it stops water coming out. So water from the rain will dam up in this area and then go through the air brick and create extra damage. One must not look for problems and find only one solution, because then you will not be solving the problem that was there in the first place. You will only be solving a part of it. When we look at the front door, we can see that the lintel above the front door has a crack in it, and just above that is a little plastic device known as a telltale. These are usually put in place above cracks to make sure that the crack is not still moving, and if it is, to monitor that movement. If movement is seasonal, then what you need to do is make sure that you don't fill that crack, because what will happen is that the crack, when you fill it, will then open up again in a different place. So you need to monitor the crack, see how it's moving, and then put in the remedial actions. Using a telltale, I've also seen two ice cream sticks being used, one on either side of the crack, and you draw a line across the two sticks, put a date on it, and then if the crack opens up, you draw another line, put another date on it, and then you can monitor whether the crack is going to seasonally close again. Naturally, that takes time, so if you happen to be living in the property and you see cracks, then it's best to monitor them a long time before you want to do any renovation projects. We're now going to move into the building, and we walk in through the front door, mind the step. And when we get to the pathway, we turn around and you'll be able to then be facing the front door again. Please be aware not to step behind the front door, as there is a hole in the floor. We know it's there. Speaking of the hole, if we look at that hole, we can see that the floor is not in a very, very good reusable condition. This floor will need to be lifted. This is what is referred to as a suspended floor. It has an air gap underneath it, and in these buildings, that air gap is the damp course. The air movement takes away any rising moisture through the cross ventilation of the air bricks that we saw outside. On a lot of buildings of this age, these suspended floors get infilled with hardcore and a damp course membrane and a new concrete surface. What will often happen with that is you would notice the rising damp, simply because the damp that is in the ground will rise up and wick along the bottom of the damp and then come into the wall, because it possibly breaches any damp course lining that you have in that wall, if there's any at all. Very often the damp line in the walls was just a lot of slate that was put in, and very often that can be breached either by extra render going on the wall or a new floor rising up above the damp line. We can notice as well in this property that it has a lot of wallpaper on the wall, and wallpaper, especially when it's peeling, indicates that there is a multitude of problems underneath. With any renovation, it is difficult to cost up exactly how much it's going to cost to repair and restore that building without first stripping out a lot of the damaged products. Stripping wallpaper is something that a competent DIY person can do themselves. Try and strip it back as much as you safely can in order to make it easier for a contractor to be able to see what it is that they need to do. Because very often, if you can't see it, they won't quote for it. Looking back at the floor, when you take out this floor, that is an opportunity to add extra insulation between the joists and also put in new technologies such as underfloor heating if required. More details on underfloor heating can also be got from the heating course that we run here at the National Self-Build and Renovation Center. It is also a one-day course and goes into the deeper technical capabilities of underfloor heating and a lot of the renewables, including also traditional heating systems. This particular property has what looks like an oil-filled radiator, which is actually just water-filled. This would have also been added to the property after the property was built. Central heating was not around in the 1930s. It is always good to make sure that these systems are fit for purpose and that the pipes are still robust. Get it pressure tested, and if you're lifting the floor, the advice is to usually replace the pipework if you are at all concerned that it is not good and fit for purpose. On the left, still facing the door, on the left towards the top of the room, you will see a box that has an electric meter in it that is the old type of meter with a turning wheel. The type of electrical system in this building is very outdated and would need to be replaced. Some of it is possibly even dangerous. You need to get a competent electrician in to have a look at the system and see what needs to be done, because the best time to rewire a property is when you've stripped it back. You do not want to try and rewire the property once you've already started making it good and you have a lovely, neat home. Think about advances in electrical systems, such as adding smart capabilities to the system or even putting in Ethernet cables and data cables for your media devices. We will now be moving across to the kitchen. So we walk along the grey path, and when we enter into the kitchen, we will also be facing the inside of the bay window. We can then see on the right we have an old cooker. On the left is a Belfast sink or butler sink. The floor, once again, needs to be replaced. We can see that we have lime and lath as the plasterboard in the property where the bay window is. If you are not replacing the bay window, you might need to find a skilled tradesman that can actually repair that type of internal finish. We can see signs of damp where the plaster has fallen away in the two corners, and that would need further investigation to find out why the damp is here. On the renovation course, we do tackle different causes of damp. We notice when we look on the left above the Belfast sink that the pipework going to the tap is also needing to be replaced, but that particular pipe is lead. Currently, the lead is probably okay for drinking water if it is in a hard water area, as calcium would have built up in the lead pipe. But the advice is, if you have lead pipes, replace them. Also, when lifting floors, if you happen to have a gas central heating system that has gas pipes under the floor, if they are iron pipes, that is also a good time to change them to a more modern and durable gas pipe, as the iron will have corroded since the 1940s or 50s when it was probably put in, maybe 1960s. The bay window is going to come out. We can see that there's deterioration, so we have to look at the building as not going from a DIY project. It is now going to be more than DIY and would fall under what we refer to as CDM rules and regulations that came into force in 2015. Anyone managing their own renovation or building project that is more than a DIY project falls under these rules and regulations, and it is worth investigating what the implications of them are on your project and what needs to happen even at design stage. CDM is all about health and safety on site, and what has to happen is that the health and safety implications of the project need to be identified early on by the designer and then handed over to the main contractor. For more information on CDM, have a look at the CITB website and Google CDM regulations. We will now move towards the outside of the building, and this is the end of the first two rooms downstairs that are as you bought the property or as you acquired the property. As we move towards the end of the grey path, past the number 4, which will be on your left, we will move around and we will now be walking underneath the scaffolding and coming back to the handed version of the front of the house. We can see, when we stand in front of it, near the cement mixer or wheelbarrow, we can see that a lot of the bay has been pulled out and the bottom wall has been rebuilt and has reinforcement bars in it for cavity wall ties, and we have the whole of the top of the building has been taken out and new timbers have been put in, even on the intermediate floors. There are acroprops holding up the timbers at the moment, and we can see that this is no longer a habitable home. This is a proper building project. When we move further across towards the front door, this is all the breakdown stage, and we can see above the door in the lintel, it has been drilled through and there have been reinforcement bars put in place to make sure that the lintel is now firmly re-secured. There can also be additional ones put in at angles if required. It is always good to get professional advice before just drilling metal bits into your walls, because you do not want them to rust and expand and create further damage. We will now move into the building again. We are now in the breakdown stage of the front entrance. We can see, if we turn back and face the door, standing on the grey path, on the right you will have a number 5. If we then look towards the left, we can see the old joists. Looking towards the outside wall, the joists are sitting on a bricklayer with a piece of slate underneath them. But what has happened is the joist has deteriorated through dry rot or wear and tear of movement. It has dropped and therefore will have a slight bounce and will no longer be usable in a new build or a secure build. On the right, we can actually see that new joists have been put in and the damp plastic membrane has been put onto the brick layer so that moisture cannot get back into the new timbers. So we have put in damp membranes. The plaster has been stripped back to make it sound again and ready for new product to go on the wall. We will now move across to the what was the kitchen area. We have moved to where you'll see the scaffolding, and there should be a number 6 on the wall at the far end. If we are facing the bay window with the number 6 on your right, so you're facing the old bay window, not the new one, which should be behind you. We can see in front of us some acroprops. One of them has a hydraulic pressure trigger on it, but most of the time you would see the ones with the twist adjustments on them. When we look on the left of the property, we can see the new joists have gone in. Certain of the joists have got membranes underneath them, and there's also an indication of a damp coarse cream that has been applied to the wall. Always make sure that you have a professional advise whether the creams that are put into the wall are appropriate. You also need to be very sure that when you apply them at the right season, as very often the creams dissipate in the wall through moisture. So don't apply them in summer, as the cream will not reach all the areas and will not then be fit for purpose. Looking slightly up on the wall to around chest height, we can see that there are some lines on the wall with little rods in them that are now being used to stabilize the cracks in the walls. The mortar gets raked out, the rods get put in. These are stainless rods, so will not rust at a later stage, and they get re-bedded with a special new mortar that will bed them back into the walls and stabilize those walls and stop the cracking moving anymore. When we look to the right, we can see on the wall is a low voltage transformer. Because the house is open to the elements, we have to have a non-lethal voltage. Just above it in the joist, you might see some rods that have been drilled through the joists. Those rods come from the outside wall and stop bowing. In the old days, you might have seen a rod with a metal X on the outside of the building, which goes from end to end of the building and stops the walls bowing. We can use these rods instead if required. We will now return to the entrance part of the building and go into the door, now entering the first fixed stage. The door you are facing should have a number 8 written on the right-hand side of the door frame. As we go into the front room, we will notice that a lot of the building starts looking more hopeful. It's starting to look like this could possibly be rescued. We will see around the front door the metal plastering guides that have been used. We have what's called a scratch coat on the plaster. That is the first coat of plaster that goes on, and it's got the scratches on it so that when the final layer goes on, which is often referred to as the skim coat or the multi-finish, when that goes on, it's got something to key into. New wiring has been put in. New doors have been put in. We've got stud work for the cupboards as well on the right-hand side. When we look on the left, we will notice that there is a plug with an orange wire coming out of it. If this was traditionally wired, we would expect 5 or 6 wires to be coming out of that plug. Modern ways of connecting electrics into a building very often now refer back to a main computer board through a data cable, so that multiple signals can be sent down one particular cable, so that you can control your heating and your lighting and other products as well from one data cable. If you need to know more about that type of product, please do speak to some of the partners in the centre that do smart homes. It is not as simple as just saying, I will put a new wire in. On the wall, on the right-hand side, we will also see a dial for the heating. Now, a lot of these heating thermostats will go back to a central position, or you might want to be able to control it from an app at a later stage. Now is the time to think of how much connectivity you want on your heating system. Do you just want a dial to make it hot and cold, or do you need some form of being able to get to it from a distance? You might think you only want the basics now, but then get a system that can be upgraded. All this dial is doing is opening and closing a valve. We will now move to the kitchen area. And if we're facing the kitchen area, still standing on the grey path on the left, we will see a grey plasterboard. It has the word Marmox written on it. There are a few of these products around. That is a waterproof plasterboard that can be used in wet rooms. It is lightweight and it is partially insulated. And by using that type of product, if there is any risk of the ingress of moisture into the wall, it will not blow the plasterboard and let the tiles come tumbling off them. We will notice around the bay that insulation has been added. Various different types of insulation have been indicated in this particular project, where studwork has been put up against the walls to allow for the holding of the wool-based insulation. The amount of insulation you need will be determined very often through building regulations and also the type of product that you use. Petroleum-based products might be thinner to get the same effective insulation than a wool-based product. So very often it is how much space you are prepared to lose in your property that might determine exactly how you insulate it. We notice that some insulation has also been put into the cavity. This is something that we need to look at very carefully, because the cavity is there to stop moisture breaching from the outside to the inside. If you are filling your cavity with insulation, you will need to make sure that the outside wall is absolutely watertight, that no moisture can get through that wall at all. When we look to the right, we see a manifold on the wall, which is for the underfloor heating. There are different ways of dealing with underfloor heating, and when we do the upstairs tour, we will have a closer look at the different types of heating systems. The manifold, this particular one, has 4 zones. You can have up to 12 zones, and therefore one needs to know how many zones you have in order to be able to determine how much space you require for the manifolds. You will need a manifold on each floor if you have more than one floor. If you want underfloor heating upstairs, it must have its own manifold. So a place will need to be defined for that, and that needs to be decided fairly early on, so that whoever is designing the pipe layout for your underfloor heating can work out the routes. Turning around, we are now facing the finished kitchen. In many projects, if the budget is fairly tight, it may be that you decide to put in a fairly simple kitchen now and upgrade it at a later stage. If that is the case, it might be prudent to tile or clad the whole of the floor so that you are not left with a footprint where the different products go. In this particular kitchen, the outline would not be the same as if you'd used a cheaper version of a kitchen. Therefore, if you have the whole kitchen tiled, you then do not need to change the floor covering when you want to change the kitchen cabinetry. Kitchens are very often the heart of the home, and albeit that we do love to try and design our systems ourselves, I would be inclined to start making notes of the things that are important to you in your kitchen, but then have a chat with a professional kitchen designer, as they will be right up to speed with modern technologies and how trends are changing within the kitchen industry. We will now be moving further across to the front room again, and as we transfer between the kitchen and the front room, we can see a control system on the wall that has a black box that looks a little bit like a small tablet, and on the right is a controller that controls the lights, it controls the temperature of the room, all from one point. When we move into the entrance, we can see a controller again that might have more connectivity on it to be able to turn the whole house lighting off and also be able to leave certain lights on, perhaps for 5 minutes while you go out to your car after it's locked. As you leave and you've pushed all off on the controller, what might happen is it will close your windows if you have electric windows. It will also know that the heating system can be turned down. It will know what time it is as well. So if you happen to be at home and you turn on a light, perhaps you don't want the light to turn on at full brightness. All of these things are possible with a smart system. And it does not have to be too smart. You can put in the connectivity that you want. We are now going through the front door to the outside again. And we can see on the right-hand side that the downpipe that we saw in the beginning has been continued all the way to the ground, but a gully has been put in so that the rainwater runs away and will not breach the air brick, which is still in place for the airflow underneath the property. You might notice in the basement area of the downstairs, there is a heat pump. This is a unit on the right that looks a little bit like an air conditioning unit, and this replaces your boiler as part of the heating system. In the basement, we run this as a plant room in the National Self-Build and Renovation Center, and these appliances, most of them actually work. So this heat pump can run, and we run it on the heating course so that one gets a first-hand experience of how a heat pump actually operates. If you are thinking about alternative technologies, then do consider the heating course. And that brings us to the end of the downstairs part of the renovation house tour. And if you want to carry on with the upstairs, then follow the grey steps in front of you up to the top. On the opposite side of the building, there is a disability lift. If you need to go up the lift and you can't use the stairs, then move around the front of the building, past the scaffolding, and the lift will be found very close to the stairs on that side of the building.